Shyam Vishnupad, Brahmam Sapurva Acharya, Asadhara Siddhu Sri Sriman, His Divine Grace, Shalaisi, Bhakti Vedanta Swamiraj, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai, Gaur Premanande, all glorious to the soul.
Hare Krishna.
All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Vidaya, Srimadhe Bhakti Vedanta Swamiraj. Namaste, Saraswati-deve, Gauravani-prasharane, Nirvishesha-shunivadi-paskatyade. Om Vajyanatvanandasya, Kananjana-salakaya, Chaktur-militam-yena, Tasmai Shri-gurave namaha, Shri-chaitanya-manobhishtam, Stabitam-yena-bhutale, Swayam-rupa-kadamayam, Vidati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shigaro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigarom Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagradatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sarivam Sanvaitam Sabadutam Purujana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakan Shenagorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishavana Sudadevi Pranamavihari Priye Vanchakapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyavasha Padiranam Bhavaneyo Vaishnaveyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pramita Nandana Shri Navikadara Shri Vasili Gora Bhaktavarina Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, text number 3. Ashvadadana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot obtain the all-conquer of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in the material in this material world. Please repeat. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service, cannot obtain me.
All conquer of enemies.
Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death.
In this material world.
Purport. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of the Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They're hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is the most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4:31:14, by giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves, and by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all other living entities. Therefore, after reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. One is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. Now, the development of that faith is the process of Krishna consciousness. There are three divisions of Krishna conscious men, and the third class are those who have no faith. Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, they cannot achieve the highest professional stage. Most probably they will slip after some time. They may become engaged, but because they haven't complete conviction in faith, it's very difficult for them to continue in Krishna consciousness. We have practical experience in discharging our missionary activity, as some people come and apply themselves to Krishna consciousness with some hidden motive, and as soon as they are economically a little well situated, they give up this process and take to their old ways again. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. As far as the development of faith is concerned, one who is well versed in the literature as a devotional service and has attained the stage of firm faith is called the first class person in Krishna consciousness. And in the second class are those who are not very advanced in understanding the devotional scriptures, but who automatically have faith, firm faith, that Krishna bhakti or service to Krishna is the best cause, and so in good faith have taken it up. Thus they are superior to the third class, who have neither perfect knowledge of the scriptures or good faith, but by association and simplicity are trying to follow. The third class person, Krishna consciousness, may fall down, but when one is in the second class, he does not fall down. And for one in the first class in Krishna consciousness, there is no chance of falling down. One in the first class will surely make progress and achieve the result at the end. As far as the third class person, Krishna consciousness is concerned, although he has faith in the conviction that devotional service to Krishna is very good, he has not yet gained adequate knowledge of Krishna through the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes these third class persons in Krishna consciousness have some tendency towards karma yoga and jnana yoga, and sometimes they are disturbed, but as soon as the infection of karma yoga or jnana yoga is vanquished, they become second class or first class persons in Krishna consciousness. Faith in Krishna consciousness is also divided into three stages, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam: first class attachment, second class attachment, and third class attachment, also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. Those who have no faith, even after hearing about Krishna and the excellence of devotional service, who think that is simply eulogy, find the path very difficult, even if they supposedly engage in devotional service. For them, there is very little hope of gaining perfection. Thus, faith is very important in the discharge of devotional service. Ashadadana purusha dharmasyasi parantapa aprapimam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, the return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Mam Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristai Buddhai Srimati Bhakti Granta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutam Deve Gauravani Vrcharane Nirvi Shesha Vishnuvadi Paskatyad Kesatana. There's another similar verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that in the fourth chapter, Transcendental Knowledge, text 40, Agyas Chasradanas Cha Samshayatma Vinashati Nanyam Lokos Dinaparo Nasukam Samshayatmanaha. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. But here in the purport, Prabhupada says that out of many standard authoritative revealed scriptures, Bhagavad Gita is the best. Persons who are almost like animals have no faith in or knowledge of the standard revealed scriptures. And some, even though they have knowledge of or can cite passages from the revealed scriptures, have actually no faith in these words. And even though others may have faith in the scriptures, like Bhagavad Gita, they do not believe in or worship the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Such persons cannot have any standing in Krishna consciousness. They fall down. Out of the above mentioned persons, those who have no faith and are always doubtful make no progress at all. Men without faith in God and His revealed word find no good in this world nor in the next. For them there is no happiness whatsoever. One should therefore follow the principles of revealed scriptures with faith and thereby be raised to the platform of knowledge. Only this knowledge will help one become promoted to the transcendental platform of spiritual understanding. In other words, doubtful persons have no status whatsoever in spiritual emancipation. One should therefore follow in the footsteps of great acharyas or in the disciple succession, thereby attain success. So one may wonder that what does faith mean? Does it mean if I have no faith? Or if I have faith, what is exactly does it mean? So Krishna had said in the 17th chapter, Satvan Rupa Sarvasha Shada Bhavati Bharata Shado Mao Yo Yo Purusham Yo Yatschadas Eva Saha, that according to one's existence under the modes of material nature, one evolves a certain kind of faith. And according to that faith, one acts in this material world and therefore naturally develops another kind of faith. To have faith in revealed scriptures doesn't mean that we simply read the revealed scriptures and we just accept whatever it says. That's not exactly faith. One translation of Shraddha or faith, Sad means the heart and Da means where we put. So wherever we put our heart, that's where we have faith in. So Krishna will explain in this next verse how to develop faith, yoga, sannyasa, karmana, atma, Gyana Sanchina Samshaya Atmavantam Dikarmandi Ivanandi Dharanjaya. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his actions, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is factually situated in the self, and thus he is not bound by the reactions of work, or conquer the of riches. Tasmat Agana Sambuddham Ritstam Atmanaha Shidvainam Samshayam Yogam Atishto Tishtabharata. These doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance, O son of Bharata, should be slashed with by the weapon of knowledge, armed with yoga, O son of Bharata, O Bharata, stand and fight. So we're already in ignorance. There is no question that we don't have complete faith. But Krishna has given us a process by which we can develop faith. And part of that process is to understand where our faith presently lies. Generally speaking, people in the being in the bodily concept of life, we may have different doubts. Those doubts have been summarized in many different ways. One of them is where Krishna says, Vita Raga Vaya Krodha Manmayamo Pashitya Bahava Jnana Tapasa Putamagavam Agata. Being free from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me. Many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love from it. So our main doubt is that is there actually a person called Krishna? And is he as powerful as the scriptures claim? Is he actually in everyone's heart? Is he controlling every atom? Is he living in a place called Goloka Vrindavan, where he is enjoying herding transcendental cows? Is there actually places where there's oceans of milk and there's Lakshmis and Vaikuntha palaces? So these things we have no experience of. So naturally, if we don't have experience of something, there's going to be a certain amount of doubt associated with that knowledge. We can't completely believe in something we have no experience of, or little experience of. Therefore, there is a process by which we can gain experience, just like I may not be presently in Belgrade. But if I'm on the road to Belgrade, according to the map that's given to me, then there should be different cities on the way to Belgrade. So if I pass the first city, and it turns out to be someplace like Brussels, then I may have some doubts about the map. On the other hand, if I pass the first city, and it's actually the city that it says on the map, then I'm developing faith that although I'm not yet in Belgrade, but at least I know I'm on the way there. So the scriptures do not only deal with the absolute level of consciousness, they deal with all the different levels of consciousness, so we can find where our consciousness is presently situated and see what the next step is. Generally speaking, as Krishna says, that there is one who's even engaged in the execution of bhakti yoga is generally in different stages, called karma yoga, jnana yoga, and then buddhi yoga, or the full bhakti yoga. So karma yoga is executing devotional service, but still being attached to the results of one's work. And jnana yoga means that one may not be as attached to the results of his work, but he takes pleasure in mental speculation to try to understand Krishna. And the other who acts in full devotion to Krishna, trying in love of Krishna, that's called buddhi yoga. Of course, we could try to come to buddhi yoga all at once, but due to our attachments and our lack of knowledge, therefore it becomes more difficult. The process that's given to us, sadhana bhakti, is the process of both gaining knowledge and executing activities, trying to remain detached from the results of the work and executing the work to please Krishna, for Krishna's mission. Those who doubt Krishna, that there is a Krishna, will obviously doubt that there's such a thing as Krishna's mission. And those who can't understand how great Krishna is, may not think that even if Krishna has a mission, we may think, well, I have a mission. My friends have a mission too. We all have a mission, and Krishna has a mission too. So I'll contribute a little to Krishna's mission, a little to my mission, and a little to my friend's mission. That may not be so conscious, but unless we actually understand that, for instance, the first class devotee, as it says in the 13th chapter, samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram vinasha vinashantam yak pashyati sapashyati. One who can see the super soul accompanying the individual souls in all bodies, and who knows that neither the soul nor the super soul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, he can actually see. Yavat sanjayate kinchit satkam stavar jangamam kshetra shedra kshetra kshetragya samyoga tadvidi bharatarshiva. One who can see the yavat sanjayate kinchit satkam stavar janma, that in all moving and non-moving living entities there's only the field of activities and the knower of the field. That's all there is. There's the soul, and then there's the field of his activities, and then accompanying the soul there's a super soul. And that neither are the soul nor the super soul within the destructible body is ever destroyed. With the end of someone's body, it's not the end of the story. He died, and, well, too bad. It's not the end of the story. It's continuation of a long, long story. So one who can see that, he actually understands. Samam pashan hi saritra samavasti dhamishram One who can understand that the super soul within everyone's heart is equal everywhere, does not degrade himself by his mind, and thus he approaches the supreme destination. So that there's a super soul and he's fulfilling everyone's desires. Everyone's getting what they desire and what they deserve, and therefore they're taking one body after another. But it's not necessary. That's the first class vision. And the second class vision, or at least according to what it says in the 11th canto, then it says that there is the Bali Sheshu Dvitsat Sucha prema maitri kripope ka yat kuroti samadhi maha. That is the vision of the second class devotee, samadhi mahadakari, that he sees for Ishvara tad adineshu. He sees the Supreme Lord, the Ishvara, and he realizes that the goal of life is to love him, to serve him, not to simply gain things from him, material things. And he sees the innocent people, or he sees the devotees, Ishvara tad adineshu, balishesu dvitvatsuja. Prema maitri kripope ka yat kuroti samadhiha. He sees devotees and tries to make friends with them. According to the instructions given by Srila Rupa Goswami, namely, Krishneti yasi giritam manasa sedriyeta dikshasti chat pranati dishtavajantam isham shushu shayat shavajnam ananya anyat Indati sunya ridayam isita sangalabhya. I want you to mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name. So they may be a rascal. They may be somebody, just like even in ISKCON, we have so many people we consider to be antagonistic towards our movement, even amongst the devotee class. But this is not a very good idea to get too much involved in disliking people who are chanting Hare Krishna. No, it's not exactly appropriate. We should maybe not intimately associate with them, but within our mind we should respect them, because it just so happens we may have to live with them eternally. If you're going to live with someone for eternally, you might as well get along with them. At least one should respect them within the mind. And for those who are actually serious, at least following the process given by our founder, Acharya, and are engaged in worshipping the deity in the temple, as well as spreading the holy name, which is the deity in this age, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, then we cooperate with them. So Prabhupada stressed great emphasis upon cooperation. He didn't want us to stay in the neophyte category, where we fight with each other. We take great pleasure in feeling ourselves advanced by claiming that everyone else is less advanced. That we have the truth and we're the good guys in the whole drama that we create for ourselves. And everyone else is the villain. So as long as we have villain, then we're good. Otherwise, there's no reason to assume that we're good. There's no villain to be good, better than. No, we try to cooperate with the devotees who are trying to spread the holy name of Krishna and the process of devotional service. And for those who are actually more advanced, who are spending their time trying to actually please Krishna, who have firmer faith than we have in Krishna, more realization of Krishna, who are not distracted by profit, adoration, distinction, or other kinds of materialistic goals of life, who can actually chant and try to listen, then we try to learn from them the process of doing so. In any case, it is not that we necessarily have to have immediately completely firm faith, but at least we have to have faith that if I follow the process, that the goal is to become Krishna conscious. And that if I actually make an effort, I can make progress in that direction. If we don't believe in the goal, we're not interested in the goal, but we take for some other, as Prabhupada said, some other reason. The neophyte devotee, they generally don't have very much knowledge of the scripture. All they know is that by taking to the process of Krishna consciousness, some of their material miseries went away. Namely, if one becomes a vegetarian, if one gives up intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling, if one is making an endeavor to fix his agitated mind upon something higher, then the result is that one feels some relief from distress. The problem is, if our goal life is to become relief from distress, then as soon as we become relief from distress, then we think, well, now I don't feel so bad, so now I can actually enjoy illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, from mental speculation. I don't really need Krishna now, because now I got actually, now I'm happy. Now I can happily enjoy all these nice activities. So one goes back and tries to enjoy these activities. And of course, because he has a little bit of knowledge, because hopefully they attended some classes, then they feel guilty about doing it. And they think, oh, this is a great impediment, this guilt that I'm feeling. And so they have to engage in more illicit sex and intoxication, more sinful activity than an ordinary person does, trying to forget to drown out their consciousness that's telling them it's not a good idea. Otherwise, they can't enjoy unless they become very enthusiastic about sinful activity. So they have to cover themselves over more than a normal person does. But if they don't completely give up the regular life of devotional service, then they come into the second class, where they take devotional service as an avenue to increase one's material happiness. One learns how to live in the material world relatively more peaceful than the average person. One stays a vegetarian, for instance. He takes intoxication only on certain holidays. He regulates his illicit sex, whatever. So he lives a regulative life. And at the same time, he knows he should eat nice food, etc., etc. So, relatively speaking to the rest of the material world, he's relatively pious, but he's not really serious about becoming fully Krishna conscious. He's satisfied to come to the temple once every Janmashtami, so that Krishna knows he's still there. He's still eligible for all Krishna's blessings. Or every other Janmashtami, in case he doesn't have time at Janmashtami, in case he's too busy. So then one becomes in the category of arthi. He wants economic development. He wants to have a better materialistic existence. And sometimes people advance beyond that and on the state of jignasu, inquisitiveness. So this is jignasu shreya uttama. This is the higher class, jnana. Krishna recommends this because generally people execute sacrifices to gain something back materially. But he says shreya swaga, shreya jnana, shreya swaga, shreyak jnana abhyasad, jnana janam vishishate. Shreya Dravyama Mayad, Shreya, Shreya Dravyama Mayad Jagna, Jnana Jagna Prantipa, Sarvam Karma Kilam Partha, Jnani Paras Mapite. The sacrifice of knowledge is greater than the sacrifice of work. Because after all, Son of Kunti, the sacrifice of work culminates in transcendental knowledge. In other words, it's more important for us to try to understand this philosophy than simply to work without any particular purpose, even to engage in devotional service. We should become conscious of what we're doing, so that by becoming conscious of what we're doing, we become gradually aware of what's to be done, what's not to be done, what we're supposed to be thinking about, what we're not supposed to be thinking about. So this is all knowledge, how to properly execute devotional service, how to use our intelligence so we can come to the platform, the spiritual platform of experience, of awareness. So transcendental knowledge and expertise is necessary to develop not only the working and devotional service, how to do that more expertly, but how to actually do it more expertly with intelligence and Krishna consciousness. So that's called enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness. Endeavor is executed with intelligence and Krishna consciousness is called enthusiasm. Because without actually becoming conscious of Krishna, there's not really much to be enthusiastic about. We may gain something, we may go from one level of management to the next, or one level of recognition in some service to the next. But without becoming Krishna conscious in that service, then it's simply temporary gain. We may be the biggest book distributor in the world for some years, but if there's one year that we're not the biggest book distributor, then we quit. And we quit the movement because I'm not the greatest anymore. And what was the value? I mean, there was some value in becoming the greatest book distributor, but we've missed the point. The point was not just to distribute the greatest number of books, it was to become Krishna conscious while we were doing it. To become Krishna realized that Krishna is in everyone's heart, including the innocent people. Valisheshu. And how vitsatsu, how to avoid the envious, and there are many envious people, consciously or unconsciously. The whole internet is full of envious people. One who gets too much involved in the internet becomes involved with many envious people who are doing everything but remembering God. Simply fighting with each other over their economic interest. Different thieves quarreling with each other, saying that you're a better thief than I. You stole from a thief, therefore you're not honest. Prabhupada said a group of thieves, they get together and they rob a bank, and the head thief stands up and says, "My dear fellow thieves, now that we've stolen all this money, please, I have one request to all of you. Please, let us divide this money up honestly." So how can thieves be honest? How can they honestly divide up the stolen property? So they're complaining nowadays that the intelligent thieves are stealing from the less intelligent thieves. And the point is that they have no plan to hand the money back to the person they took it from, namely Krishna, to utilize it in Krishna's service. They only want to utilize it for their sense gratification, and they're complaining that some people are utilizing it for their sense gratification and not allowing us to gratify our senses. But the object is simply the same thing. People are disturbed, they can't get enough of materialistic life. But the aim of life is not when you have a temperature of 105 to make it 108. Aim of life is to get free from the temperature altogether, not to complain that this man has 108 temperature and mine is only 105. Why should he have 108 and I only have 105? Therefore, one should avoid the envious people who are more or less dominating the materialistic culture in modern society, and try to take shelter of the process of devotional service. So doing so is called faith. If we think, well, I don't have time for devotional service because I have so many other important things to do, like surfing the internet and taking care of all my plans to go, my vacation, and so many other things to do. Well, that shows our lack of faith, and therefore we complain. When we chant around, we find it hard to concentrate. Of course, because we have so many things to think about except for Krishna. And these things come up in our minds, and then the holy name disturbs our meditation or our materialistic plans. Because in order to concentrate on the holy name, we'd actually have to forget our material plans, but we don't want to. Therefore, the holy name we think is a distraction. But actually, it's our materialistic plans that are a distraction from the holy name. And if we concentrate on the holy name, then some of our materialistic plans will go away, but then we'll see they weren't as important as we thought they were. Therefore, it says that faith is most important The faith is developed in association with devotees by hearing from the revealed scriptures, and then not only hearing from them, but making an endeavor to try to make some improvement, especially in our sadhana. That is, to chant a prescribed number of rounds every day. Not only to follow externally the four Yuga principles, but become convinced that it's a good idea to follow these four Yuga principles. Not that life would have been better at the time of initiation if I only pledged three regular principles. Namely, no fish, no meat, and no eggs. So if I made that vow, then devotional service would have been much more pleasant. But somehow or another, I had the ill fortune of pledging to follow four of the principles, but it's very hard to take this very seriously. So as long as we have that mentality, then devotional service goes very slowly, if at all. We have to give that up and become determined that actually it's a good idea to control my mind and senses and engage in Krishna service and avoid all kinds of materialistic endeavors and gross material fall downs. Then with that faith, we can make progress towards actually becoming conscious of Krishna. Then our mind becomes peaceful and steady and fixed enough that when we chant the holy name, we can actually listen. Not only to the holy name, we can listen to the philosophy, we can listen to others also. It is not that there's the holy name, there's the philosophy, and then there's the real world out there. No, we can't listen to Krishna, we won't listen to anyone else either. Not really. Because if we don't accept the fact that we're servants of Krishna, we won't accept the fact that we're servants of anyone else. And if we're not in the mood of being a servant of anyone else, then we're in the mood of being a competitor to everyone else. We may put on the show for some time that I'm your friend, or I'm your husband or wife, or I'm your, you know, parent, or I'm your child, whatever. We may put on that show for some time, but within our heart, unless we accept ourselves as a servant of Krishna, then within our heart, we simply see everyone else as an avenue of exploitation. The children are always trying to exploit their parents. The parents hope that in the future, when the child grows up, they can exploit him. He becomes rich, and then they can get all his money, at least part of it. The wife, everything is 50-50, like wife and husband. As soon as you want 55%, there's divorce. So I can protect my extra 5%. So it's material life, as Prahlad Maharaj said, means business. There's no question of love. It's simply business. Only when we become Krishna conscious can we actually have a proper family life, proper relationships and friendship, proper relations with our child, with our parents. Only in that way can we actually become a well-wisher of others. Otherwise, no one is a well-wisher of anyone in this material world. So that requires some faith. Faith and practice. And as we practice with faith, then Krishna reveals to us what we originally have faith in, and that becomes a realization. But that doesn't mean even when we get a little realization, we've understood everything. Therefore, devotional service is a process from Shraddha, a little bit of faith in the beginning, to Sadhu Sangha, to Bhajana Kriya, to Anartha Nivritti, and then Nishtha. So at least we have to come to the platform of Nishtha. That whatever faith we may have now, we have to employ it by associating with the devotees, hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, serving the Sankirtan movement somehow or another. Having faith in the devotees who are engaged in the Sankirtan movement and trying to cooperate with them to spread it further according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. Then, with such association, we practice our sadhana and try to become free from our unwanted desires, especially our attachments towards material gain, our lamentation over material loss, and our lack of proper faith that there is a Krishna. He is in everyone's heart, not only the men and the women, but also the animals and the insects. And he's equally kind to all of the entities and wishes them the best, that they come back to the spiritual world. And our endeavor is to help them. Then if we give up our unwanted conceptions of life and materialistic habits, then we can actually become purified by Krishna's grace and come to the state of nishtha, where we're not disturbed by whatever remains of our material attachments, and we can happily and steadily execute our sadhana and fully engage ourselves in devotional service, and from there devotional service gradually becomes pleasurable, spontaneous, and comes to the platform of ruchi and asakti, where the mind becomes completely attached to Krishna, and then eventually bhava and prema, and then perfection of life. So I'll stop here. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
May I please ask, when trying to avoid the envious people, how can we know which are most envious in order to avoid them?
The most envious? Well, I guess one thing is you can try and distribute some of the book. If they buy the book, they're not so envious. But we don't know how in everyone's heart. We're not probably so perceptive. But we should understand that practically most people in the material world who are not following Purity principles and chanting the holy names of Krishna, to some degree or another, are the envious of Krishna. They may be innocent, but still, not only they're envious of Krishna, they're envious of everyone else. I mean, if they knew how great Krishna was, they'd be completely envious of him. But then it doesn't take a person like Krishna for them to direct their envy. Even a person who has one penny more than they do, they're envious of them. What to speak of God, who has unlimited wealth more than they do. So if they're envious of some person who's just a little bit in a better situation than they are, what to speak of what they feel about God. So this material world is a place of envious people where everyone is competing with each other to become better than them in something. And their only happiness is to feel that they're better than everyone else, or some people. Yes.
On the path of this process to spontaneous devotional service, can it become more difficult than it was in the beginning?
Yeah, of course it can become more difficult. In the beginning, sometimes Krishna encourages us. Because otherwise, unless we were encouraged in the beginning, when we have little knowledge and little experience, we wouldn't bother taking up devotional service. In the beginning, Krishna has to inspire us by giving us some extra encouragement. But it's not that the path is only Krishna is going to drag us back to the spiritual world. We have to be willing to get up on our own feet and walk there at least. So therefore Krishna has to give us some opportunity to show our own determination to make progress. Not that in the beginning it was mercy and we think it's going to be mercy the whole way. I put up my hands and Krishna just brings me back. Easy. Even though I didn't even want to go, but somehow or another Krishna just... We have to direct our lives in such a way is that we develop a desire to go back to the spiritual world. It has to be our own desire to do so. And sometimes that means we have to give up the things that we're attached to. So that's the difficulty. We don't really want to give them up. We thought we were going to get all the mercy without giving up anything. But it doesn't work like that. Therefore, eventually Krishna he's going to take away all our material attachments, but we have to be willing to give them up also. Not that Krishna is trying to take it away, we're holding on tighter. You rascal Krishna, you're not kidding. Greedy. Don't you have enough? You own everything, you're not going to give it. I'm not giving up my anartha or my material attachment. Give me your mercy, but don't take this. Yes?
I want to ask, because you talked about faith, what should our attitude be towards ideas or rules or standards that we do not understand or do not agree with?
Can you give me an example?
Okay, I think I can. I had a discussion with a devotee about an idea, and in the end my reply was, okay, it might be like that. She was exposing an idea. And I said, okay, it might be like that. And the reply that I got was, I'm telling you, it is like that. And I had no reply to that. I didn't know what to say or what, okay.
So what if someone maybe like that, so what? What do you
yeah, think? But I didn't understand it. You know why it is like that? Like, just
yeah, there are so many things we don't understand.
I know, that's why I'm asking what should our attitude be towards
it. It means that we should just understand we don't understand anything. But it doesn't really matter. Whether there is a mountain 800,000, the ocean is 800,000 miles high made out of gold. We don't know if there is or not. I mean, I haven't seen a mountain even a mile high made out of gold, especially. So whether there is or not, it doesn't affect the fact that I have to chant my rounds and with attention and try to call out to Krishna and Shrimati Radharani. It doesn't really matter. Probably I'll get a couple of chapatis today and some sabhi whether the mountain exists or not. So for my life, it's really irrelevant. So many things are just irrelevant in our lives. It doesn't really matter. So we shouldn't worry about it. And maybe in the future we may understand it. Maybe we won't. We're back to Godhead. And we didn't understand some point in the philosophy, so what? Because you haven't met Lord Indra in the heavenly planets, but you're in the Loka Vrindavan. It's not that you're going to think, well, wait a second. I never met Indra. Is there a plane going back to the Indra? I don't know if it was really an Indra or not. I want to find out. No, we'll be satisfied enough in the Loka Vrindavan. We won't worry about those things. Is that right?
Okay, and if we do not understand, and maybe we follow something that someone tells us.
Well, can you give me, what was this particular point that she said that you didn't understand?
I don't know, about something that if you eat, after you eat it, you get contaminated and there's more bacteria in the mouth than in anything else, something like this it was. And then
if you eat what?
If you eat anything,
yeah,
your whole
bacteria.
Body gets contaminated, and that's why we do not enter the kitchen, and we wash ourselves before that, and we do not enter the kitchen, and we do not eat in the kitchen, and so on.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if there are so ideas or rules, and is there a danger in us doing and following something that is not correct?
Well, do you think that... In other words, before you go into the kitchen, you should wash your hands and your mouth? Is that very difficult to
yes,
do?
It's true, but you know, in our culture, people used to eat in the kitchen, like the table kitchen was for eating, for example. You know, this is different for us.
So, if you ate outside the kitchen, what would happen?
Nothing happens, but I don't know how to explain this at home, for example. Do not eat in the kitchen because what? You know, I do not know.
Well, because there are different levels of contact. In other words, eating is, by the very process of eating, it invokes a certain amount of desire for lording it over the material nature. Because that's the very nature of eating, devouring something, devouring another living entity. So a certain amount of material desire arises every time we eat to devour another living entity. So unless one is completely pure and is actually eating purely out of love for Krishna, then one should be not contaminate the very place where the offering is being made for Krishna to please him. Now if the kitchen is simply made for our sense gratification, then it makes a little difference because the kitchen is always contaminated anyhow with that desire. We're just cooking for our own sense pleasure. But if the kitchen is actually dedicated pleasing Krishna, we don't want to bring our own materialistic desire to enjoy and lord all of material nature into the kitchen. It's like if you're having a, for instance, a Well, just a material example. Say your little children, you're having a puppet show for them. And then someone comes in and he takes a pig and slaughters it right there in the puppet show. Then obviously it's going to disturb the puppet show, wouldn't it? It would be a little out of place. The children might get a little disturbed and hearing the pig scream. It would spoil the whole thing. Similarly, if one is in the mood of trying to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead out of love and devotion and offer him food for his pleasure, if someone comes in and just eats for their own pleasure, then it spoils the mood of devotion that's trying to be cultivated in that particular area. Is that clear?
I wanted a general answer because I didn't know what attitude should I have towards these things.
Yeah, there are reasons. I mean, the modes of nature, we're actually experiencing the modes of nature. We're in the mood of enjoyment and the mode of passion is generated. And from the mode of passion we lose our intelligence usually to some degree. We become less clean, we become less aware, we become absorbed in our sense gratification. Therefore everything becomes in that sense, contaminated. We don't clean properly. We don't do things properly. Only when there is a mood of devotion is generated, at least the mood of goodness, and everything is properly cleansed and everything is properly done in a sequential order. Otherwise, in the mood of passion, everything goes for whatever our senses drag us into doing. Therefore, we try to avoid it. And even if we think we're great devotees, that we're doing everything purely out of love for Krishna, simply to set the example for others, we should follow. Anything else?
Yeah. The disease of the body and mind can affect our faith.
Well, certainly the mind, if we're diseased in the mind. Well, the real disease of the mind is the fact that we're addicted to lust, anger, and greed. That's our disease. That we're addicted to lording it over the material nature, or we're trying to enjoy the material energy. Or we think that we're the ultimately doing everything in the benefactor of others. So those are all different modes of nature, which are really the disease of the mind. So that obviously affects our devotional service. But just ordinary disease of the body or even some mental disturbance, if we can go on with our devotional service, as long as we tolerate, a certain amount of tolerance has to be there. If we don't learn tolerance, we take so seriously our own particular materialistic state and we can't perform a devotional service, then it becomes a problem. What we see in Prabhupada's life, even when he had when his whole mouth was swollen by some kind of tooth problem, he had diabetes, he had heart problems, but still he executed his devotional service without any deviation. He tolerated and went on. If only to show us an example of what we should do too. Okay, so we'll stop there.